Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our weekly Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, here in the top center. Joined up top here by David Griggs.
Yes.
Vitale. Down at the bottom row, we've got John Stalica and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org. And we normally record these around 9 o'clock at night on Monday nights. We're recording a couple hours early. It's around 7 p.m. Eastern right now as we record this. That is because everybody wants to be done.
Big night of SWAC basketball tonight.
The huge Texas Southern at Prairie View game of the season in the SWAC, and I know everybody wants to be off in time. Unless it's been canceled. Who knows? Anyhow, this is the podcast where we review everything and anything that's going on in college basketball, at least among all the major teams. And what I will do here in a second, if I can get it to work, is we will go ahead and we'll pull up some standings and discuss.
We'll do that even if you can't get it to work.
Even if I can't get it to work? All right.
It never works.
It's easier for Chad to do it because he actually does have arms.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get it up because I don't have any arms. It's hard to click buttons with no arms.
I want to start with a little blind resume today. We haven't done any of these in a while. I thought it would be a little fun test to do a little blind resume today before we get into the standings here. So I think if you guys are seeing it, we see two teams up there on the screen. And Mr. Tytel, let me start with you here, the two teams. When you just look at these blind resumes, do you have any feelings on which one is better?
Always. I'm always terrible at figuring out who the teams are, but I can give you a couple of things to look for. So one thing for the team on the right is you see all the Tier 4 wins down there.
Garbage.
That is not something the committee likes. So I think that
is that Wazoo?
You know, also, the non-conference, which is in direct relation to the non-conference strength of schedule being 232 up top. The other thing that sticks out to me is that they both have plenty of games coming up of top 100, if not top 25 teams. So there's plenty of chances to advance, but that's about all I got. So I'll defer to somebody else.
Yeah. I already know who these two teams are.
Well, if Sleek already knows, Rocco, let me ask you, would you agree that the team on the left looks actually, I think, a lot better profile wise right now than the team on the right?
Well, it depends on what your appetite is. I mean, the wins, clearly the team on the left, but the extra loss there on the right, you know, there's a little dent there for that. And, you know, they got killed by a Tier 2 loss, a 15-point loss. Is that right?
Or no, that's the team on the right with a 15-point loss in Tier 2. You have both losses of the team on the left are Tier 1, Tier 1A losses. Only one top. One win of the top two tiers on the team on the right. So the reason
I'll take the team on the left.
And I'll bring this up here because in the national polls, at least, the team on the right has been ranked all season and is still
significantly
higher than the team on the left. The team on the right is the Texas Tech Red Raiders, while the team on the left is the UCLA Bruins, who finally cracked the top 25 this week.
Yeah, I just figured out that it was UCLA on the left right when you had said that. I've been – and it was obvious, too, because of the Pac-10 schedule, home, away. I should have known it was travel partners. Mm-hmm. That was something I noticed but still didn't put together. But, yeah, UCLA, they are into the rankings, finally. But I just want to know, how is
they're not even in the AP, only the coaches poll put them in.
Yeah, they're not even in the – how is it they go unnoticed? You realize that they're not – again, as you can see, they're 9-2 on the year, four – really good wins in Tier 1 and Tier 2, including a couple of really good road wins, the Arizona sweep, undefeated in a power conference play six games in. And if you go back to last year, and I know that, like, the rankings reflect what's going on this year, but just to show how much of a role this team's on, they're 16-3 in their last 19 games. How is it possible that a Power 5 team – can have those kinds of numbers and still sort of be under the radar? And the only thing I can think of is that UCLA just doesn't have the basketball history to get people's attention here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tytel, how about this UCLA team, though? I mean, is it time for the world to start taking notice of this team?
Absolutely. I mean, it used to be hard to survive the road trip to the Arizona schools. Even with their senior leader, Chris Smith, out for the year with a torn left ACL, they beat the Sun Devils in overtime and my Wildcats by 5 to improve to 9-2. They host the Washington schools this week and then the huge game at the Ducks next week. Their only losses, opening night at San Diego State and by 7 to the Buckeyes in Cleveland. I have them as a 6 seed right now.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'll go with the whole Pac-12 standings up here because I think it's a conference that we have sleek. We've been kind of almost barely paying attention to this league. I put together a bracket today, and I had 5 teams in here. I probably would have had 6 if Arizona was eligible. I think, you know, have we been undervaluing the Pac-12 so far this season?
Oh, I certainly think we have, especially after what happened this weekend here. I mean, we talk about a team like UCLA who's been quietly winning road games. How about USC, their travel partner, also sneaking into the desert and winning at Arizona and Arizona State? I mean, you add that with the win against BYU earlier in the year, we have to start looking at the Trojans as a team that's going to be a pretty big noisemaker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rocco, look at that USC profile. It's I know you just wrote about them today also. It's right there with UCLA, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I could argue that USC actually was more dominant in the desert sweep versus UCLA. And it was the first time USC was able to do it since 1985. Big accomplishment for them. And I think the thing that I, you know, really caught my eye today when I was doing a deeper examination of what they've been doing so well is their defense. I couldn't believe how good their defense is performing. They have the 10th most efficient defense in the land, 5th best effective field goal percentage defense, 2nd best 2-point percentage defense, and 6th in block percentage. So that's obviously the effect of Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley's now won multiple, I think 3 Pac-12 Freshman of the Week awards. I mean, there's some great freshmen in this league. I think what Enfield's had to do with this team the last 2 years to get them to be successful, you know, we've had our jokes about Enfield over the years, is to have a really kind of non-sexy defensive-minded ball club with a kind of a poor, mediocre offense, but it's working to get victories. And I think this team looks like a bona fide tournament team building a great resume.
Rocco, you mentioned Enfield. I don't know. Like we don't really pick on them that much, do we? Because I if anything, we did. I guess we kind of used.
We did a couple years back.
Yeah, USC has a tendency to start off nowhere on the map, no expectations at all, and they always end up doing really well. It seems like they surpass expectations as much as anyone, and on a national level, is Andy Enfield undervalued as a coach? Because look at what he's done there. You know, and he was damn good before he got there too at Gulf Coast. So is he better than what his brand is, so to speak?
I'll tell you, to take a look at the rest of this conference too, I mean, you have Oregon picked up, got a split this week, believe it or not, lost the game to Colorado, but you've also got Stanford out there, picked up a couple wins this week, albeit over the Washington schools. I mean, they're, you know, Arizona State, we're not even talking about them and as being one of these top teams in the conference, and they were one of the preseason favorites if they could find a way to bounce back. As we record this right now, Colorado is up by a few points on the road at Utah, but Colorado really looking good as well. Is this looking like instead of maybe a 2-bid league, like maybe a 6-bid league or at least a 5?
Take your foot off the pedal in the
district. Okay.
Under if that's the over-under. No, I think the two LA schools are looking great. Oregon looks great. Stanford, I still have question marks. I'd set the over under 4.5 and probably take the under as of today.
You're only at 4. Really? Okay. But there you see the upcoming schedule. Probably half these games will end up getting canceled, but not much to help in the metrics for the Southern Cal schools as they host the 2 Washington schools. Sorry, Rocco. I know you're a Washington alum, and I don't think you want to even discuss them all this season, as they may be on their way to our Stallings Award as the worst power conference team in T1.
Pretty strong contender.
But let's talk. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just a final thought. Just taking a deeper look at the results, you know, one thing that's helping these teams come up the seed list, if you will, when you're going through bracket exercises is a lot of the best teams have been playing each other. So that helps. Like Colorado, that win at USC now just looks so much better than it did last week. Like they played now both Arizona schools, both LA schools, and the mountains are mixed in there too. So since they've all played each other, the results are starting to look a lot better. But the big thing that this league's going to have to be careful of is when they play the Washington schools, when they play Oregon State, not to stub their toe. And that's going to be a big test throughout the year because those programs are also very well coached and they're capable of an upset.
We look up the upcoming schedule. One game, two circles, Saturday, Arizona at Oregon. That's a huge one, even if Arizona's not eligible there. I think that they would be a tournament team right now if they were eligible.
Yeah,
that would get tight tail to the over on that 4.5 if they were. But let's talk about the Big Ten also. You know, it was not a good week, unfortunately, for my Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who are now sitting after a 7-0 start, are sitting at 7-4 and out of the top 25. So let's discuss everybody else other than them. David, how about the top there with the Michigan Wolverines now up to 5th in the coaches poll, 7th in the AP poll, undefeated?
Yeah, in a big game tomorrow against Whiskey, which is probably, even though they're at home, going to be one of their tougher tests. But I really like this Michigan team. I like them more than I thought I would coming into the year. Juwan Howard, you might remember, and I think as we talked about earlier, I mean, they came out guns a-blazing last year, tapered off a little bit as the season went on, but still really solid. I don't think they get Whiskey tomorrow, though. I like Wisconsin even more.
And actually, Stalika, when you go down through this conference, you just keep looking at, and everybody, we thought maybe Maryland was going to be the team that loses some games. They come out, get a huge road win at Illinois yesterday. You know, is there anybody we can write off other than Nebraska here?
Well, Maryland is starting to look like Marquette in that you get them against the top 10 or top 15 team, and they're actually going to be quite competitive. I mean, even Nebraska has been, even though they haven't won a game, they've been kind of a little bit of a pest at home. And I think whoever they're playing next is going to have to be on their guard come Tuesday night. The name of the opponent slipping off the tip of my tongue. And
I'll get up on the screen right here for you.
Penn State is not going to be an easy out for Rutgers either.
Yeah, well, Rutgers-Penn State game, that game is off. That game has been postponed due to an outbreak with Penn State. But Illinois is at Nebraska. Tytel, Iowa sitting there now, actually the highest ranked, at least actually higher rated in the AP, but lower rated than Michigan in the coaches poll.
11-2, they beat the Terps and the Gophers last week. Not sure which game scares them more this week, hosting Michigan State or going to Northwestern. It seems ridiculous, but I think it might be the latter. They've been living by the three, team shooting 39% behind the arc, and Luka Garza still remains my top pick and kind of not even close for National Player of the Year. He already passed Aaron White to be the number two scorer in school history with 1,918 career points. He should pass Roy Marble for the top spot sometime next month. Only two losses, Gonzaga at a neutral site and a 7-point overtime loss at the Gophers. I have them as a 2 seed.
I think it's very fair to have them as a 2 seed. Rocco, a few other teams in here. We've got Purdue sitting here who, you know, just is finding a way to tread water, at least so far in the Big Ten, and a huge week this week with the game in Indiana.
Yeah, Purdue, I mean, what a performance last Friday. They were dead in the water in the first half. I think they trailed by as many as 17 in that game and really put the clamps on the Spartans defensively. And I don't think people realize how big of a force Trevion Williams is down low. He scored 24 of his 26 in that game in the second half, really sparked the comeback. Michigan State didn't adjust to that second half adjustment that Coach Painter made. And ultimately, Williams hit the game-winning jumper in the final minute. So Purdue gets a steal of a win at Michigan State. And if you remember Purdue's resume last year, we got to the point where you just couldn't take any more losses. And I think they finally hit that 16th loss and we had to write them off. I think that's going to be Purdue's biggest threat to missing the tournament this year. All their losses are acceptable. The only one they've lost to a team that's not inside the bubble was at Miami. So it's a road loss. And, you know, you just got a gauntlet of a Big Ten schedule, but they've already got good wins now with Michigan State and Ohio State. This game with Indiana, another opportunity. But teams like Purdue, like Indiana, great examples of, where is the NCAA selection committee going to draw the line on how many losses you can have? Do you need to be two games over 500? If that precedent holds true, All these games are big. So Purdue needs to get wins where they can.
Well, this is 2021, Rocco, but we're calling them Maryland this year because the Terps are now 7-6, but they have two monster wins, but now they just got to get that quantity up.
Yeah, and I tell you, unfortunately, my Rutgers Scarlet Knights made up in that boat as well after what they've done. I thought when they went to Michigan State and got and lost that game, I thought it was because the Spartans finally figured things out, moving Rocket Watts off of the point. But turns out when we saw with the Michigan, what happened in the second half of Michigan State Purdue, and then we saw Rutgers could just get blasted at home by Ohio State and just, I mean, did not look good defensively at all in this in that game. I'm very concerned about my Scarlet Knights right now, David.
Well, I don't. I still think Rutgers will kind of come out of it. I mean, they really did look, really bad. Like you said, we won't harp on how bad they looked because Chad, they really looked bad. Rutgers, your team looked really bad.
They did. I admit it. They looked awful.
Yeah. A couple of things. Northwestern, who we haven't talked about yet,
deservedly so.
Yeah, is there sort of – were they sort of like a firework that blew up real big and it was real exciting, but then once it blew up, it sort of went away and dissipated? And
they were DePaul in the top 25 last year.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that. Something about this that I just noticed as we were recording is, if I'm counting correctly, the overall average ranking, 10 of the teams are in the top 50. And I know that the net is the sorting tool, but essentially every game – that you play in this conference is against a quad one or quad two game. That's where
I'll take that another step, David. 13 out of 14 are in the top 60. I mean, you just go 10 more points and you've got the entire conference.
Right. And could you imagine if Tim Miles was still at Nebraska? I mean, we'd have everybody in the
A little slow on the draw there. I'm sorry. I apologize. I tried to hit the buzzer on you, but
you don't need to apologize for that.
There you go.
Well, what the? But anyway, just to keep in mind, I mean, how good it would be if Tim Miles was still there, and Rutgers was bad this week.
Right, let's jump over to the Big 12 Conference. And Tytel, let me start off with you with the team that is the only team other than Gonzaga getting votes to be number one in the nation, although only a few votes in both polls. Number two overall, the Baylor Bears, took care of Oklahoma, a pretty good Oklahoma team, and just blasted TCU on Saturday.
That is the perfect lead-in because Gonzaga is getting all of the attention. This team is 11-0, all 11 wins by double digits. What more do you want? They are starting their most difficult stretch of the season. They host West Virginia, they go to Texas Tech, and they host Kansas in the next 8 days. We're going to see if that streak comes to a pass or not.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here. Sorry, the West Virginia game for tomorrow night is actually off. West Virginia, I believe, has had a COVID outbreak, so a couple extra days off for Baylor, but they still have a tough stretch.
There's two game stretch of the season coming up. They've been living by the three. They're shooting 43% behind the arc as a team, unstoppable. And junior Jared Butler is only getting better. His best all-around performance of the year at TCU last Saturday, 27 points, 8 boards, 5 steals, 4 assists. I have them as a one seed, and in any other year, they'd be the number one overall seed, I think.
Can we pull up Baylor's profile, please, Judd?
Sure.
Okay. Because one of the things I still think Gonzaga, honestly, is the better team and better profile, but I don't want to say that Baylor doesn't deserve a lot of attention. And when you look at something that, like, Baylor has, if I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they have 6 games remaining against likely protected seeds. In when you mix Kansas and Texas. And they're going to have played more protected seeds than what Gonzaga had by the end of the year, in all likelihood. So they're going to have, at least on paper, a really strong case for the number one overall if they can keep winning at the clip that they're winning at.
It's kind of a shame that Auburn is their SEC Big 12 opponent and it's not somebody better than that.
Yeah, I've never been – I kind of wish they would do the bracket buster format where they don't name the opponents until about 2 or 3 weeks before the event. I mean, you know which teams are at home or on the road, but if we were doing that now, there's no way they'd be matched with Auburn. It made sense at the beginning, Auburn, a recent Final Four team, at least the last time we had a tournament, but I mean, they would be playing Tennessee or somebody like that if we were naming them now, wouldn't you?
And not somebody bad like Kentucky. But let's talk about some of the rest of the teams here. Rocco, how about the Longhorns? they went 2-0 this week, but not nearly as easily as Baylor went 2-0.
No, I mean, the Iowa State win was dominant, so they played well there. But the game on Saturday against West Virginia, I mean, without some some amazing breaks, Emmett Matthews missing those free throws in the final minute, which allowed the opportunity for Andrew Jones to be in position to win the game with a three from the corner. That particular three for Andrew Jones, the legend continues. So cool to see that. What a moment. But from West Virginia's standpoint, just absolutely terrible defense. All five guys converged to the ball, and Jones was sitting out there by himself in the corner. I mean, if you're a D1 Big 12 caliber shooter, you're knocking that down at definitely like 60% or more of the time. So Huggins, I didn't see his post-game press conference, but he had to have been chapped. Texas, great win. The journey continues. They're a top caliber team. My fourth number one seed right now, and deservedly so. They get Texas Tech on Wednesday. Another big game.
Yeah, it's Stalika, probably the team that had the roughest week. Not that they had suffered bad losses, but 0-2 for Oklahoma. You know, they could have really used a way to maybe even sneak out that Kansas game too, because they're sitting there with that 6-4 overall record, which is going to be tricky to get that to a good number at the end of the season, isn't it?
Well, that one was going to be the tougher of the two because Kansas was winnable, and I think they already had one other game at home that had already gotten away for the Sooners right here. So the clock is going to be running out, but this is going to be a bedlam week for them on Saturday.
Yes, the Oklahoma State game. You're sitting here with Dave with this Oklahoma State team that, you know, maybe they win their appeal. Maybe they are eligible. And I think that they would be a tournament team from what we've seen so far from this.
They would be. And, you kind of wish the NCAA would. I know that they're not in any hurry right now. They're actually getting slammed with waiver requests for players that are probably ineligible going in to the second semester. Since the NCAA tournament isn't for another few months, it might not be a quick decision. But if they do get that waiver, they probably are a tournament caliber team. And I mean, as a fan, I kind of hope they do. Another team, Chad, that we're going to get to that isn't really in the protected seeded range, but maybe hovering around the bubble a little bit, is TCU. But they had a rough week, like Rutgers. I mean, they're just bad. Did you see the bad week Rutgers had, Chad?
We are moving on, and we were kind of comparing Baylor and Gonzaga earlier. So I figured, well, why don't we just jump over to do a quick talk about Gonzaga? We didn't even discuss last week the fact that they were going to be hosting BYU at home because the game wasn't scheduled until after our podcast was over. Rocco, actually, the Gonzaga team here, that they crushed BYU at home, which is where they've struggled with the Cougars of the past. This team continues to look completely unbeatable, no matter how good Baylor was looking, as we discussed earlier.
Yeah, one good way to deal with any kind of threat is just to blow the threat out of the water right from the opening tip. And that's what Gonzaga's done multiple times this year. They did it drastically to BYU. I think it was 31-7 right out of the gate. But a bunch of other impressive scores along the first half, and it was basically over by halftime. That's a really nice.
It was over before halftime.
It was exactly. Over by about the first, by the under 16 timeout, I think.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how BYU was supposed to be ready for that. I think the game got announced 2 days before. You got to pitch a perfect game if you're a WCC team to even stay in the game with Gonzaga. And it's just, yeah, they're just too good. Even on a bad night, they're going to win by 15.
Stalika, they've got Gonzaga, Coast Pepperdine, and then assuming it's a go at St. Mary's on Saturday. That has been a dangerous game in the past. But do you think that the Gales have anything this season?
Well, St. Mary's had a chance at home against Santa Clara and already came up short in that game. So in one respect, they're already going to be behind the eight ball right here.
Yeah, and Dave, it's actually a big week for St. Mary's. They've got BYU before that, and then BYU at San Francisco, so a big week for BYU too.
Yeah, and St. Mary's needs to lift some heavy weight and get some quality on their resume, because you can always say, well, if they can beat Gonzaga, they can't beat Gonzaga. Nobody in this conference will. You almost want to amend the team sheet to give some sort of credit for anyone that keeps within 20 of Gonzaga.
But again, BYU really could use a sweep this week. That those two wins against quality teams against San Francisco and St. Mary's would really help their resume coming off of that loss. But
Santa Clara improving as a program. Is there enough there? I know that they went to the bakery. That's a bloated record against a weak schedule, but they did win at St. Mary's. I think that they've got some legs.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll have to see that. You know, I think they got to beat BYU, and they maybe have to find a way to get a win over Gonzaga if they really want to become a tournament.
Right. And they certainly had a better week than Rutgers. Rutgers, did you see – or Chad, did you see the bad week that Rutgers had?
I tell, over in the ACC, we've got the standings here, and still somehow in the top 25 in both polls is the Duke Blue Devils. Do they really deserve to be there?
I mean, they almost lost to BC at home, so I want to say no, but they took care of business. They beat BC and beat Wake last week.
They struggled with Wake, too, though.
True, but I think they won by around double digits or so. And their coach is now out of quarantine, so I think that's always a factor. Tough game at Virginia Tech on Tuesday. We're going to see if they're for real or not, because the Hokies, I think, are for real. They're going to kill from behind the arc. They're allowing 37% three-point shooting. They've also had the juggle lineup. Sophomore Matthew Hurt is the only Blue Devil who started all seven games, and freshman Jalen Johnson is still out with a foot injury, so they have excuses. 6'2 freshman DJ Stewart, he was amazing last week. He's 6'2. He averaged 18 points, 7 boards, and 2 blocks last week. I have them as an 8 seed right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird that we're talking about a team being an 8 seed when I just look at a triple-digit net, and I'm like, you know, I mean, there's no ones in the top two quadrants, and there's a Tier 3 loss, even though the Tier 3 loss is going to get a lot better as Michigan State improves. David.
Well, yeah, and right now, and I realize that everything is still kind of taking shape, but if you look at that, they have not beaten a team that any of us are expecting to be within 100 miles of the NIT. You know, Wake is, while improved, not going to be an NIT caliber team, and neither is anybody else. So, like, I mean, they say it's an eye test, and the only thing I can say is that they look at the resume, and it says Duke on it, and that looks good. So they keep voting for them. This is not a top 25 team. At least they might get there by the end of the year. It's a crazy year, and they could improve as it goes on. But they haven't looked – they can't beat teams outside the top 100 without sweating. So how are they a top 25 team?
They've only got 2 games left against teams with that triple-digit nets, and that's against both Notre Dame and Wake.
Yeah.
All right. Salik, the team on the right there, I know you're a huge fan of the Louisville Cardinals, so I had to bring them up for you. How about this Louisville team? I don't know if they've been impressive in their wins, but the resume is starting to look pretty good.
Well, getting a win against Virginia Tech is going to be at least a minimum as far as staying within the top of the ACC. And winning at Pitt is actually starting to look a little bit better with the Panthers actually sneaking into Chad's field this week.
Yeah, I'll get to Pitt in a second. I guess with Sligo, my problem with them is I think when I saw the game against Wisconsin, I just wrote this Louisville team off, and that's the only game they lost, though, no matter what the final score was.
Well, that's the only game that they lost, but Seton Hall and Kentucky were examples of games that could have gone either way for the Cardinals, but they found a way to win them.
Yeah. And Pitt, Rocco, I did a bracket this morning, my first bracket I've done all season, and I actually think this Pitt team belongs in the field right now. You with me?
I think they're right there. They're either the last team in or the first team out, depending on how you feel about Oklahoma State, which is another topic I'll save for the final thought. But yeah, they're right there on the cusp is the point. And, you know, Pittsburgh's resume right now hedges mainly on how Northwestern ends up. If they keep falling apart, that win doesn't look very good. But if they can get some more wins, that helps Pitt a ton. Syracuse success also going to be big for Pitt. They just got the big win there. And that win, you know, Chad, was tremendous. If you take into account the fact that John Hugley, Nike Sabande, Noah Collier were all left at home for COVID restrictions. Justin Shimpagde was out with a knee injury, and they just got some good news on him. He's going to be back sooner than expected. So completely shorthanded and down by 12 with 7 minutes to go. A massive turnaround late because Syracuse kind of was lethargic down the stretch. all of a sudden turn the fortunes around for what we're seeing out of Pitt. But the fact that they were able to win with, you know, just a few players, that a few key players, they got all these guys coming back soon. The prospect looks good for Pitt.
It's amazing. This is a team that was, I mentioned earlier, the award we give for the worst team in D1 that this team won it a few years back.
They did not have a good start to the season, but they've been good ever since then.
Yeah, the opening day loss to St. Francis of Pennsylvania at home, it did not look good. But after that, they've been, if they'd won that game, they'd probably be getting top 25 votes right now.
Probably so.
You look at the rest of the ACC there. Actually, let's take a quick look at their upcoming schedule. If we can get this up on the screen here.
Pitt and Syracuse are playing again on Saturday.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe we don't get their schedules, but otherwise we'll just – oh, here we go. Yeah,
here it is.
There we go. Well, things are running a little slow today, but we've got that. We've got BC at Notre Dame. I don't know why that one was highlighted. And the big game actually coming up next Monday, Notre Dame at Howard, national televised game. So congrats. It's bigger story for Howard, I think, than for Notre Dame right now.
But. Yeah, two.
I think somebody at Fox is what I heard today, actually.
Yeah.
Big Fox.
Well, you kind of hate that, you know, we're not out of the pandemic yet and that Maker is out, because that could have really been a special day for Howard.
It is a big week, I think, actually, for North Carolina as well. I think they've got Syracuse and at Florida State, and the Tar Heels could really use a few wins, too. They're only 2-2 in conference and no top 25 votes.
Real quick, Chad, on a serious note, a tip of the hat to Notre Dame for scheduling that. When they scheduled it, it was not during a pandemic, and they expected Maker to be there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's jump over to the SEC here. And let's start at the top of the SEC, Tytel, with the Alabama Crimson Tide, who have a game coming up tonight in a different sport of somewhat importance. But as soon as that game is over, this is where all the Tide fans should need to be looking at this basketball team, isn't it?
This is the hottest team in the SEC in football and basketball. They have four straight wins, Mississippi, Tennessee, Florida, Auburn, to improve to 9-3. And much like Baylor, they're starting their most difficult stretch of the season at Kentucky, host Arkansas, at LSU in the next 9 days. I want to see a little more consistency from freshman Joshua Primo. I know that any year freshmen are tough to get the judge, and this year especially without all the practice time and stuff. The kid goes scoreless against Florida and then has a career-high 22 against Auburn. I don't understand where his spectrum is, where the ceiling and the floor are. As of today, I have them as an 8 seed.
Only an 8 seed, really?
What do you got him at, Chad?
I don't remember what I had. I think I had it a little bit higher than that.
You had him higher than that, yeah.
Yeah, I think I did. David, Kentucky, I think we're going to be discussing this team every week. And, you know, now 3-0 in the SEC. They pulled out the win over Vanderbilt somehow, but they look really good in the win at Florida.
For the first time this season. And, again, we discuss this every year where Kentucky doesn't really start off going 100 miles an hour. They start off maybe going 40, and then they pick up speed. And then it seems like around Christmas, they really kick it in the gear. Maybe they're still on that schedule, just a little bit behind because of the late start and just the craziness with COVID. But they really did look good. And when you have that much raw talent that's – that young and hasn't been playing together for very long, it can take about half a season for it to really start to reach its potential. And is that what we're seeing? Are we going to see Kentucky become a force the rest of the way? And then at the end of the year, they're in the top 25 and in the tournament like they always are.
I think we are. And I think maybe this week was the week that turns things around for them, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But Rocco, another team that had a good week with a pair of wins was Mississippi State.
Yeah, this Bulldog program, you know, we didn't think much of them before the season, at least I didn't. They're getting tremendous guard play from both DJ Stewart and Iverson Molinar. The way that they were able to respond, you know, another team with a monster comeback. They were down 12 at half against Mizzou. Mizzou coming in, of course, with a really solid resume to the hump. And what a turnaround in that second half. I think what you saw in that game was Jeremiah Tillman dominating down low in the first half. Bunch of great second half adjustments by Coach Howland, And they really contained him in the second half and let their guards do the work on offense. And they ran away with a 15-point win, and that really puts them on the bracketology map, you know, with a significant win like that. And then they got tested a little bit on the road at Vandy over the weekend, but just simply outscored them and shot the lights out. They shot 61% for the night and got an 84-81 victory. So now 3-1 in the SEC and and sitting pretty.
Yeah, A&M and Florida at home are their next two games.
To build on what Rocco said, like I wasn't expecting much out of in fact, I was expecting them to be awful. Ben Howland has – I don't know if they'll be there at the end, but one of the better coaching jobs in the country this season, what he's done at Mississippi State, even if they don't get there, as bad as we all thought they were going to be, they're good.
They lost a lot last year.
Yeah.
Look up the upcoming schedule. You'll see some little bit of craziness in Tuesday's games. The Tennessee at South Carolina and Vanderbilt Missouri games are both off. Instead, they've rescheduled it, and the Tennessee Vanderbilt is the real game tomorrow. And Tennessee Vanderbilt is going to play twice this week. They're going to then play in Knoxville on Saturday. But Sleeka, the big game, I think, is tomorrow night's Alabama Kentucky game.
Now, that's certainly going to be the marquee game, but another team we're going to have to watch this week is going to be the Florida Gators. They hit the skids thanks to games against both Alabama and at home against Kentucky, but they should be able to rebound at home against Ole Miss. And now on the road in Mississippi State at the hump, starting to look a little trickier.
Yeah, that should be a fun game on Saturday as well. So again, always assuming these games even happen. Let's jump over to the Big East. I was trying to wait on the Big East because we're watching UConn and DePaul as we record this, but there's still about 6 minutes left in that game, so I don't think it's going to go final before we're done. As we are watching, DePaul is beating a UConn team that just broke into the top 25 this weekend. Tytel, how about this UConn team that might be right back out of the top 25 if they can't find a way to win this game?
They just missed two free throws.
They should be. I can't figure them out. 6-1 after double-digit road wins at Marquette and Butler last week. Built an excuse, their star player, James Bouknight, still out due to a hyperextended left elbow. Although, you can't lose to a DePaul team, even on the road. They've beaten them 10 times in a row, for God's sake. And it's not even the hardest game this week. Huge home game on Friday against a very well-rested Villanova team who's not played since before Christmas, as if any of us can even remember Christmas at this point. Great perimeter defense, though. They're allowing only 28% shooting from behind the arc. And their only loss as of this second is a two-pointer in overtime to Creighton. So I have them as an 8 seed, but they might be off the bubble if they lose tonight.
Yeah, it's really struggled with DePaul, who hasn't beaten them in years upon years upon years. Sleeka, I want to talk about your Xavier team here also. On Sunday,
I don't know why, because I shut the TV off as soon as they were down 7 points.
They were down. It was a – well, maybe I should ask David about that, because, David, you sent out a tweet when they were down 7 points that says that Xavier's going to win this thing at the buzzer.
This was just this game from tip to buzzer, and it's been like a lot of Big East games, but this was more of a Big East game than even most Big East games. It was like, you know, massive, massive momentum swings all the way through, and like, you know, one team, it looked like they had control of the game, but the other team would come roaring back and not only be back in it, but looked like they were in control. It was back and forth, at least that's how it felt. So humorously, late in the game, I want to say with less than 2 minutes to go, Xavier was up, was it 5 or 7? No, it was 5, and appeared to be in control. And then just a flurry, you know, Providence comes out, goes on a 14-2 run, and has complete control of the game with less than a minute to go. They're up 7, and I sent out a tweet saying, well, the way this is going, it'll swing back. A 7-0 run is nothing for Xavier in the final minute. And sure enough, they won on a last-second shot at the buzzer. It was an 8-0 run.
It was, you know, honestly, I thought it was great defense by Providence for the entire last possession until they decide to leave the guy open from three. After some great defense down low, they were not going to let Xavier tie the game. And they didn't. They let Xavier win. But
right, and that's what happens. I mean, the defense collapsed into the lane when Xavier kicked it into the lane. DePaul, in that situation, and Providence, they were on the road, if a team ties you, you don't want to – you want to win, but you don't want to lose. If a team ties you, okay, we'll get them in overtime. You don't want to just give up the three. they had no one outside on the perimeter. There was no one within 20 feet of him.
One other team I want to discuss, Rocco, the most impressive week this week out of the Big East, I think, was Creighton with what they did to Seton Hall.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a beatdown. Gonzaga style, right? Where they just go out and start raining bombs. Yeah. It makes it really hard to come back, especially a team like Seton Hall that, you know, they like to get the ball down to Sandro and use all five positions. It's just Creighton's guards. I mean, they're fantastic. Everybody can hit from deep, even guys like Mahoney. So Blue Jays are dangerous, I think, especially at home. You know, it's a little bit of an anomaly that they lost to Marquette at home earlier this year. I think they've got that sorted out. They've now won six in a row. So definitely a top contender with Villanova to win this league.
Interesting game tomorrow night, Providence and Marquette, two teams that really could use wins at this point in the season, among others on the schedule coming up there.
Providence is going to be another interesting story in themselves because this is now the second game they've let get away, not in the closing minute, but the closing second,
which yeah.
back to the Creighton game, because that was another one. They came back. It looked like they were going to take it to overtime until they gave up a breakaway dunk in the final seconds of the Blue Jays. So there's a thin margin of error between Providence being, let's say, 3-5 or even Xavier. They could potentially be 1-4.
Let's jump over to the American Athletic Conference. And I guess we should start, Dave, let's just start maybe with Houston at the top there, who, you know, after they suffered the loss to Tulsa, has bounced back with a nice pair of wins this week.
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't think any of us thought Houston would run the table. Well, they didn't. So, I mean, even though that they appear to be way better than anyone else, we didn't think they'd win them all. So it isn't overly alarming that they lost that game to Tulsa, and I think that they're back in stride. Wichita State, one of the better stories of at least the conference, with all of the turmoil they had out of conference off the floor, for them to come down and kind of group together and rebound from that and be 7-3 on the year. And while they didn't get the win, they played hard. This team plays hard, Wichita State does, and they play together. And I don't know if they'll be there inside the bubble at the end, but they are certainly exceeding my low expectations that I had for them.
Yeah, I didn't have any expectations for them either. They then also followed up with a win over Cincinnati, a Cincinnati team who, Rocco, we had liked SMU all season, but you know, they just laid a clunker against Cincinnati on Thursday night.
Yeah, and Cincinnati, you know, we kind of beat up on them on previous episodes. I think they're just a younger team that's trying to find their way. You know, Keith Williams is an excellent player. He's playing at a very high level. And, you know, I even thought Cincinnati in the second game of the week, they were right there with Wichita. I just lost it in the last couple minutes. But, you know, that was a tough week, a tough road trip for the Bearcats. To get a split's pretty good. On the flip side, SMU got a bounce back win today against Temple. So I think they're okay. One thing about this SMU team is I don't know if they're ever going to get Ty Jolly back at this point. He was supposed to be their captain, their leader, and he's kind of went astray from the team, and they don't know if he's ever coming back. So that's an interesting story to watch. But Kendrick Davis is a special talent, probably a first-round NBA draft pick. And, you know, from here on out, they've got talent to get to the tournament. They got to make better decisions down the stretch. I thought they were pretty sloppy at the end of the Cincinnati game.
Tytel, Tulsa did pick up another win, albeit at South Florida, who's not that great of a team. But, you know, should we be paying attention to them as the second best team in this conference now with SMU falling?
We have to. I talked about how Alabama is the hottest team in the SEC. This is the hottest team in the American. Six straight wins, although they started 1-3, so only 7-3 overall. And they do have their difficult stretch coming up at Wichita State, host Memphis, at Houston in the next 10 days. Terrible free throw shooting, 66%. Good news, their opponents even worse, 60%. Senior Brandon Rahal has been on an amazing tear in January. 20 points, 10 boards, 3 assists, 2 blocks, 2 steals a game. He's doing it all. Probably not making the tournament, but here's the scenario. They could finish 18-6 in the regular season. Let's say they get a couple of nice matchups and win a couple of conference tourney games, then they lose to Houston in the title game. They're 20-7 overall, and each of their 7 losses are to top 80 teams. Squeeze them in the bubble, maybe?
I'll tell you, if you told me 2 weeks ago that Tulsa at Wichita State was the best looking game on the American schedule any week this season, I would have laughed at you, but it really is when you look at this upcoming schedule. I mean, there's probably more to play for that game than any other game on there. Mountain Houston, West.
Houston shut down? They don't play this week?
They're playing.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I think they play what they play South Florida this week.
South Florida Thursday. Yeah.
Over in the Mountain West conference, let's start at Salika. Let me start with San Diego State. They went 2-0 this week, but were not impressive at all in doing so. 5 points over Nevada, 2 points. 5 points and 2 points over Nevada, both games at home.
Can't help but wonder if Colorado State started to give other teams in the conference a bit of a blueprint right here. But granted, it's still going to be two wins over Nevada. And if you look at the past week's results, everyone that won at least actually went 2-0 this week.
Okay, Stelika, wait. Is Colorado State's blueprint to fall behind by 24 by the end of the game?
I mean, it's a bit of a risky blueprint. There's no mess
at success. Well, I'll tell you what, let's discuss this Colorado State quote-unquote blueprint, but how about the Colorado State profile overall now, actually, Rocco? A pair of wins over Vegas at home. You add in that win against San Diego State, and this team is suddenly on the board, aren't they?
They're definitely on the board, yeah. I think they're probably, I don't know, somewhere between the 6th and 10th team out. But, you know, they're right there in position. It's just going to be difficult because in the Mountain West – you really only get the opportunities against Boise coming up, and Utah State playing a lot better. So, and they get both those games on the road. So maybe a split at Utah State, and they get Boise at home. You know, with Boise at home, that's a possible split or even upside sweep. But it's a lot of pressure too. Like, you know, Colorado State, they're right on the cusp of losing both those games to UNLV this week, a UNLV team that had over 20 days off before coming to Fort Collins. So tip of the cap to the Rebels for making those great games.
Yeah, really they were. And if you look at the other team I pulled up there on the right, Titel, Boise State, I'm really high on this team right now.
You should be. I mean, they lost at Houston by 10 on opening week, and then they've won 10 in a row since then. Great perimeter defense, only allowing 28% behind the arc, and they make their free throws, unlike Tulsa, 76%, which is why they've only played two games decided by single digits, and they won both of them. Junior Marcus Shaver, he missed three games last month with a foot injury, bounced back in a big way, 15 points a game over his last five, despite coming off the bench in all but one of them. He's probably the favorite now for conference sixth man of the year. They didn't make my first bracket of 2021. I have him as an 11th seed now.
And again, Wyoming, while not in the bubble, like I think that they're going to help the metrics of the teams ahead of them. San Diego State a little
177 net's not helping very much. They played an awful strength of schedule. They played a 335 strength of schedule.
335. Well, you know, but they are 7-2.
If they beat Boise this week, it'll be a lot different.
They won't beat Boise this week or any week really. Some dead weight at the bottom here too that hurts the metrics. But again, the committee hopefully smart enough to see through that. We certainly are. But yeah, I mean, the thing is with Boise and Colorado State and certainly San Diego State and Utah State making a lot of noise in this league too, all four of those teams holding serve and three of them have a quality win on that profile. And if you get like one big quad one or quad two win and avoid bad losses and hold serve, you're in the discussion. This conference has four teams in the hunt.
I don't think they
get all four. Don't misunderstand me, but they have four that have a realistic path to get there.
All right, David, I'm going to pull up Utah State's actual profile for you here because I understand. And Utah State's going to be the team, I think it helps the metrics. This is their profile. It's all quad four wins.
They have a big week, couple weeks.
Yes, they've got the next four games. Are San Diego State, Colorado State, all at home. They win three out of those four. I'll talk Utah State with two of the four,
wouldn't you say?
Three out of the four. Not when the only team you've beaten in the top three quadrants is Northern Iowa, no. Although it was Northern Iowa was more full strength, so I'll get the credit for that. Let's what are we doing here? I think we have one more conference that we skipped. Oh yeah, it's the Atlantic 10.
It's the Atlantic 10.
I don't know.
Our favorite league.
It's not exactly doing anything great this week. David, St. Louis has been shut down, but they are still in the top 25, way down there in 11th place, but number 24. As Stolica is highlighting the fact that Fordham picked up the huge win over Dayton. Actually, that was a hell of a game.
Right. I mean, let me put this in context right here. Fordham had two losses at home by average of 30 points, and Dayton, who I think had only lost to the Rams one other time in league play, just lays an absolute egg in the middle of the week.
So Dayton not quite as good as they were a year ago. I think are we all pretty in much agreement on that?
Yeah, 100%. But Dayton loses to Fordham, and then they go and they win at Davidson, and there goes Davidson's profile now, and these teams are cannibalizing each other. Same story Tytel with VCU, wins at George Mason, but loses a home game to Rhode Island.
Very disappointing. I mean, I like the Rams and the Rams as well. They'd won seven in a row before a 15-point home loss to Rhode Island. They had the D.C. on Wednesday to face GW, and then they have back-to-back Saturday games at Richmond and home to Dayton. There's few teams in the country that are more dependent on a single guy than VCU is with Nashawn, a.k.a. Bones Highland. He's scoring 18 a game. There's only one other teammate he has averaging more than 8 a game. Probably not their year this year. They do have 8 games left against top 75 opponents in the next 8 weeks, so certainly room for tier one wins.
One of them is that Richmond game. That's the big rivalry, David, so that's one we always circle every year. But what do we do with this conference? Is there anybody besides St. Louis? I mean, can we make the Richmond argument still? I guess if Kentucky gets better, we can.
You can certainly make the argument. When you look at these teams and you see – I think you pointed it out that they're kind of cannibalizing each other, because Richmond has shown us at times that they can be good. So has the Bonnie. So has VCU. Even Rhodey has, and certainly St. Louis, but they don't bring it every night. And in this conference, whereas the Big Ten, you're playing 80% of your games against the top two tiers, this conference is all over the place. And if you stub your toe, it's not that you stub your toe, it's that you blow your foot off when you lose some of these games. And, like, you know, a tournament-caliber team should not be losing to Fordham or to Rhodey at home by 15.
I think that covers everything. So I want to do now is turn to any other final thoughts. Just one piece of news here before we get to that. We didn't mention at the top of the show, but the NCAA finally decided to debate any changes to the name, image, and likeness rules, and to the making permanent the one free waiver without having to sit out a year. Yes. And what they decided to do today was table it for next time they discuss it. So yes, nothing got done. They decided to not make a decision today.
Okay, yeah. So they had – this was going to pass, but it was not – in a lot of people's minds enough. It was not substantial or sufficient. And one of the groups of people that did not feel it was sufficient was the Justice Department of the United States sent a letter saying that there may be problems and that it might be illegal. Generally, when you get a letter from the Justice Department, Chad's a lawyer, Tytel's a lawyer. When you get a letter from a Justice Department telling you what you might be doing is illegal, it's a good idea to stop and re-examine it, and that's what the NCAA has decided to do. I think they're going to rewrite the legislation, and I think they're going to say, hey, for those of you railing against this, we just got a letter from the Justice Department, so you might want to reconsider voting against it. I believe that's what's going on. That was going to be my final thought, but you brought me right into it.
Well, David, we'll get back to you for any final thoughts in a moment here, but let me run through the rest of you. And let me start with Rocco. Let me start with you here for any other final thoughts.
Yeah, two quick ones. So Oklahoma State, a team that has had a postseason ban they're dealing with since last spring. As you guys know, they've appealed that, and the first hearing got delayed. So what I'm noticing across a lot of different bracketologists right now is the thought is that by the time they actually get through the proceedings and get their appeal heard, we may have already had the tournament. And as it stands right now, the committee would have to consider them. So
yes,
until further notice, Yeah, so until further notice, Oklahoma State should be in brackets, which I was not doing. So I'm just throwing it out there in case anybody else was doing that.
I'll tell you what, for next week, I'll take them out of red, and let's start putting them back in and discuss them as a possible tournament team until we hear otherwise.
It's a weird technicality, but if you appeal to the NCAA while it's under appeal, so in the time between when you file the appeal and get the decision, you're green. Your light is green.
Cool. Yeah, and then one final shout-out goes to the Loyola Marymount Lions, who was on a 22-day layoff due to the holidays and COVID-related issues. They came back last night to play a tough San Francisco team. Looked excellent. The big man, Lou Pepe, and Eli Scott led the charge, and the Lions took care of the Dons. And now they're 1-0 in the WCC. So good story for new head coach Stan Johnson and a team to watch.
Absolutely. Salika.
Yeah, a couple final thoughts here. Number one, if there was any doubt last year that Obi Toppin was the National Player of the Year, that has been erased after the Flyers' horrible week against Fordham and LaSalle at home. But on a more serious note, you talk about the game winner by Xavier against Providence yesterday. Colby Jones, this was about 48 hours after he had learned that his grandfather had passed away. So certainly a big moment for him as well as the entire team.
Absolutely. Titel, before I get to you, a couple scores that we discussed during the course of the show, both those games went final. Colorado did hold on to win at Utah, picking up another road win. And UConn did not suffer the disgrace of losing at DePaul. They did find a way to win the game. But final thoughts from you.
First, a response to David. Believe me, I wish everybody took letters from the DOJ seriously. I assure you they do not. as far as a final thought, Oscar Tshiebwe, preseason all Big 12 player. So New Year's Day, he announces he's leaving West Virginia for personal reasons. Sunday, he said he's transferring to Kentucky. I don't know how he's going to fit with the team, but consider this. If the Wildcats end up missing the tourney because of their terrible start this year, that means that a lot of their freshmen will probably not leave early because they won't have as much of a high ceiling. And they're still going to bring in a top 10 recruiting class next year. Could we be seeing Calipari's first Final Four since 2015? Maybe.
I don't know.
Hey, could happen. Happen this year. Could happen this year, even though. So who knows? David.
Well, I get several letters from the Justice Department. I ignore them. So you know, I wish Chad would do a better job defending me in court. Other than that, I have no more thoughts. That is. I'm out of thoughts.
Oh, thank
God. I'm not surprised you would ignore letters from the Justice Department because I've also been getting your mail from the IRS for a couple of years now.
We have to have a discussion to talk about those bills.
My money.
David.
Yeah.
But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us.
How are your gambling debts not cash deductible? That's what I want to know. I should be able to write those off.
Yeah, you definitely need to speak to somebody. On behalf of John Titel and David Griggs up here, John Slika and Rocco Miller, you can check them out as well at bracketeer.org down in the bottom row. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. And we will, you know, I got to say this.
Rutgers is bad. They had a bad week.
Of all the podcasts we have ever done, this has certainly been the most recent. Thanks for joining us, everybody.